Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us as we stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are rebroadcast on A2Zen.fm, and that is a website you can go to check out when the program will be aired. And it's done several times during the week. And then we're also archived at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. So lots of opportunities for you, as I say every week, to check out the programming, check out our guests and the information that they have to offer, just like our guest today, who is going to talk to us about something that we've talked about on more than one occasion, or maybe 100 occasions for all I know. At least it's been brought up, and that's the issue of meditation. Effortless Mind, Meditate with Ease. This is a book by Ajayan Boris, and he is with us via Skype, which is becoming a rather familiar tool that we're using here on this program to bring our guests a little closer to you. And Ajayan, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Richard. Good to be here.
It's great to have you here. And of course, that is a subject that, of course, a lot of people talk about. Years ago, in one of my interviews, we were talking about meditation. And of course, I'm asking, well, what's the purpose? What is it that we're trying to achieve? And so on and so forth. And I get sort of all kinds of different answers. But I have to say that the one answer or conclusion more than anything else that I came to was not as much acquiring inner peace and tranquility and all those things as much as it was achieving those things through the process of listening to the, you know, listening for and to that still small voice, our intuition or higher self and so forth, that can actually bring that calming state. And yet not everybody refers to it in that context. So maybe we'll start from that particular perspective in terms of your point of view as to, shall we put it in the context? Although, again, I understand that there isn't really anything to be, there's no real goal. You know, we're not trying to go from one end to the other per se, but at the same time, there is a reason why people meditate. And so from your perspective, why should we spend time meditating?
Well, so that is really an excellent question. And when I think about it, I guess, you know, we experience our entire lives, all perception, every thought, every feeling, you know, everything that we're going to be able to accomplish, all our relationships, it all comes through that filter of our mind, basically, our consciousness, let's say, which includes the heart, you know, includes emotion and feeling. And so if we can purify and clarify that, the quality of the functioning of our heart and mind, and make it as deep, as expansive, as broad, as sensitive, as clear as possible, then we're going to just enjoy life so much more. We're going to be able to contribute so much more, give so much more to our, you know, family, friends, relations. So for me, it's about, it's kind of about that, living life to the fullest, and living your potential to your fullest. And to do that, you really have to, you know, take a look at your own mind, because the mind is that important.
Well, now that's another aspect too, that, we can talk about in light of the process. Some even talk about trying to still or quiet the mind, to control it, to push it aside, those types of things, because that's where some people refer to it as the monkey mind or the mind chatter, those types of things. And I have to wonder if those are real accurate in this context, just simply because, you know, the things that we're trying to do, the things that we're trying to, as I said before, sort of achieve through this process, you know, I mean, there are those who actually look at it, maybe not quite to this degree, sort of as the end-all, be-all and end-all to get us through our day, if you will. Sort of a magic bullet or a magic pill of sorts, where we're not ingesting some other chemicals. We're trying to keep it natural, trying to keep it pure in that respect. But, you know, we are trying to, you know, I've heard some people say that a good meditation session beats a good cup of coffee any day, because it will help you to stay focused Whereas people who, you know, slug down a cup of coffee, they tend to have that sudden burst of energy, if you will, and then they from there they have a little bit of difficulty from that standpoint functioning throughout the rest of the day. So it's an interesting dichotomy, I suppose, and yet I'm going to guess that there really is no dichotomy. This is what is, and I know meditation goes back a long way. What is your experience in terms of or understanding of, shall we say, the history and or lineage of meditation?
Let me give you a little background, I guess, on my history with meditation. So I started in 1970, and I studied with my first teacher was Maharshi Mahesh Yogi, who was the founder of the TM group, you know, the TM program, which is Transcendental Meditation. So that comes from India, from a very ancient tradition, at least, you know, several thousand years old, maybe much more than that. And so meditation, and then after that, I studied with various teachers. I don't know if you've heard of Amichi, the hugging saint, but she's a wonderful saintly woman from South India who's also a fantastic mystic. And I went and lived with her in her ashram and for 4 years in India and was the meditation teacher there. And when she would travel around the world on her tours, I would go up to the Himalayas and also study with some of the yogis and sadhus up in the Himalayas. And so most of my background comes from India. That's where, you know, I've studied the most. But what I found was, these techniques have been handed down from teacher to student throughout the millennia. So it goes way back, at least several thousand years. But, I wanted to also say, because yes. You raised several points in your last statement. One was about the monkey mind. And that's very interesting because I would say this, a lot of people enter into meditation with this idea that they need to silence their mind. And many, if not all, find that very difficult. And indeed it is, because the nature of the mind is to think. And so I actually feel that this kind of concept around meditation that you have to silence the mind, that the mind is a monkey that you somehow have to control, is really the biggest obstacle to successful meditation. That rather we have to kind of learn to move with the mind and just simply change our relationship to our thinking. And that is the key to meditation, because actually the truth is once you engage in a fight with your thoughts, you're done for, because that effort of struggle against thoughts or trying to control thoughts is going to agitate your mind and keep you right at the surface, so that you won't be able to have a very subtle experience and you'll feel frustrated. So that's the sure path to frustration, not to meditation. And any time meditation works, it's going to happen very gracefully, very effortlessly. It's just like falling asleep. It has to happen effortlessly, whereas if you try to fall asleep, you're going to be just tossing and turning. So the key to meditation is to actually learn to move with the mind's natural tendency to go towards more happiness and more bliss. And actually the process of meditation can take you to that inner bliss, to an inner sense of felicity. And that's simply because, that peace, that relaxation is very satisfying to the mind. And also those deeper levels of the mind where you transcend to in meditation hold a lot more juice, a lot more creative intelligence. And the mind really enjoys that experience of its own creativity, its own intelligence. So it just gets drawn into this more blissful state. And that's why in India they call that Satchitananda, which is being or truth and consciousness and bliss. It is a state of bliss. So if you know how to point the mind in the right direction through the technique of effective meditation, then it becomes not a struggle, and you don't have to think about monkey mind at all. You just begin to transcend into a deeper state of silence.
Well, you've been teaching people all over the world about meditation and how to meditate and so forth. And there are different kinds of meditation, as I have been learning over the years, that people can do. And sometimes it's incorporated in the context of various yoga practices. So I'm curious as to what you have found are some of the, shall we say, more effective meditation methods.
Well, okay, so, you know, this is interesting because this has been my passion for over 40 years, because I've, you know, been very dedicated to meditation. At first, you know, it was all about gaining enlightenment for me, but it gradually just became, living more of life, living more of my own potential every day, and still a very great focus on getting the most out of each meditation. And so whenever I've gone from, you know, teacher to teacher and exploring various techniques, it's always been to find what is most effective, you know. And so that's what I teach in the Effortless Mind Meditation, and in my book, Effortless Mind, I teach a program of meditation that I found to be really effective, very accessible to people. And the first place I like to start off with is a very simple, you know, technique that helps to begin to activate the subtle energies in the body. You know, that we have different levels to our being. There's the physical body, the energetic body, the mental, emotional body. We can talk about that more if you're interested in that. But when you can start to work at this level of the energetic body, it really prepares you for a deep experience of meditation. So that's the first technique I teach people. And then there's a number of techniques that I teach in classes, and also I have a course in that on my website called Toning the Energetic Body. And these involve various breathing exercises that just, you know, they kind of put you right into a state of meditation before you've even started meditating. They just open that sort of inner channel to your own depths, and you just feel that peace. And so anyway, I teach those techniques too as a preface to meditation. And then I like to teach a chakra meditation and as well a mantra meditation, and then a body scan meditation. And that is that sort of whole program put together is what I call Effortless Mind. And the key to it, again, actually, this is even more to the point. The best form of meditation, as I was saying earlier, should be effortless. You know that because if it's effortless, that means that we're not doing it; nature's doing it. So that we're learning to allow the nature of the mind to go towards its own inner depths, to seek that experience of bliss, perform the meditation, to do the meditation, and then that means we don't have to do it, and so we feel like we're just meditated, and we just fall into this deep state. So I think those are, that really is the best form of meditation.
I know that one of the humorous aspects of meditation for a lot of people who say they have trouble meditating is that they say they fall asleep. You know, they get so relaxed that they actually do effortlessly fall asleep. And granted, that is certainly going to be, I don't know that that's necessarily a problem. I did hear one person who led a meditation group basically saying, don't worry about it. If you fall asleep, it's okay. Then you needed the rest. That's kind of how they looked at it. I think that's probably appropriate to take the pressure off, because I know a lot of people think that you've got to do it right or correctly. And would you say that there isn't necessarily a good or bad, right or wrong per se? It's if you choose to meditate, then you'll find you kind of find your own way sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. And first about the sleep, you know, I totally agree with whoever it was that you heard. Actually, the way we get the benefits of meditation is through a process that you might call purification. You know, it's very similar to sleep. You know, you go through a full day and you're tired at the end of the day, you go to sleep, and then lo and behold, you wake up the next morning, you're refreshed. So a lot of something happened during the night. You know, you went, you know, a lot of chemical changes happened in the brain and the organs. Growth hormones were released, stress hormones reduced. You know, there's a lot of subtle changes that happen that create that restoration of sleep. And scientists are still studying that. They're still trying to understand everything that happens, and they know they don't. So the same happens in meditation. You actually get an even deeper state of rest during meditation. And so there's this whole purification that takes place that's very rejuvenating and clarifying. And that's how you enjoy the benefits of meditation. Now, some of what gets suggested is, you know, stress and tension get dissolved. But also, if you've got a lot of fatigue, maybe you're overworked, you're overtired, and if you have that fatigue and you start to meditate, then that is going to start to be released. And when that is released, you'll tend to fall asleep. And so why fight it? You know, there's no sense in starting to fight against what's happening naturally. So we just don't fight sleep. So I totally agree with that fellow. And that kind of relates also to thoughts, because in that process of purification, it's kind of like the different stages you go through in a night's sleep. You'll have deep dreamless sleep, and that deepest rest of dreamless sleep will allow the system to start to adjust its chemistry. And with those adjustments in chemistry, then that causes corresponding mental activity. So you have dreams, and then you'll go through some dreams for a while, and then you'll go back into dreamless sleep, and then dreams for a while. And the benefit of sleep comes through that entire process, both the dreamless sleep and the dreams. You need them both to be fully rejuvenated when you wake up. And likewise with meditation, you'll go through periods where you'll have a deep, clear experience in meditation, and then you'll also have periods where you have lots of thoughts. And it's a very similar mechanism that's happening. You're going, that deep clarity that you'll have in meditation is allowing the system to rejuvenate itself, which involves chemical changes. And when those chemical changes happen, that stirs the mind, because mind and body are closely related, and so you'll have more thoughts. So the thoughts are actually part of the purification process that's going on. It's like the smoke of the purification. So that is a very you know, natural part of the meditation, and once again, that's why there's no sense in fighting against thoughts. So the whole idea that you have to quiet the mind is really a very linear view of meditation. And if I can just, I know I've been going on, but there's one little analogy I like to give that helps get this across, and that is, if you think of the mind as an ocean, and before meditating, it's like we're just hanging out at the surface of that ocean, going from thought wave to thought wave to thought wave. So then once we meditate, it's like we slip beneath that surface, and as soon as you go beneath the surface, there's some silence. You experience an inner silence. But it doesn't mean the whole ocean has become completely still. So there still can be thoughts on the periphery. And you can go deeper and deeper into the ocean, into that silence. And at times it'll seem like the whole ocean is completely still. But, you know, there still can be some subtle thoughts going on in the periphery. So, again, it's kind of like you're changing your relationship to thought. You're not giving it the thoughts the same credence, the same juice and attention that we do in the waking state. When you're in meditation, you just let them float by, and we become, therefore, a little bit liberated from our thoughts. We identify more with the inner silence and less with the thoughts, and they're just passing by until finally we're really fully identified with that inner silence, and then we just start to explore that, and then it's a wonderful experience of meditation. Mm.
Well, it's to me, it's a very interesting process that I have not actively pursued in spite of all of the years of my study of especially of what I call the ancient wisdom teachings and the various writings and so forth. But I noticed that you've traveled around the world to various places teaching meditation. One of the locations I find rather fascinating that it says here that you have taught meditation was India. And I'm sitting here going, wait a minute. I thought the Indians had this down pat, you know. But by the same token, there are a lot of other people living in India other than the native Indians of that land. And certainly they don't necessarily come there and automatically assimilate through osmosis the ancient ways of the rishis and the swamis and the yogis and so forth. But that's something that I'm curious about as well. You did mention I don't know that you would necessarily call him your guru, but someone that you studied with for a number of years. And I have to wonder if I asked this question of one of our guests previously in regards to someone finding their, we'll call them a guru or a master or a mentor, if you will. There are those who basically will go through their entire lives and never latch on to, if you will, or connect with one particular individual. And yet there are others who, boy, they find this one person and boom, this is the teacher that they're with for the rest of their lives. Those who don't have that connection sometimes wonder, well, geez, is there something wrong with me? Should I not have someone that I can go to and learn from? I mean, I'm rereading Autobiography of a Yogi again for the, 15th or 20th or whatever time. And that's literally in the last year or two because I've sort of brought that back. And I listen to the intention with which not just Paramahansa, but others within the book are searching for their guru as though without this guru, their lives are not going to be as fulfilled in that respect. And I know that's not, I'm overstating it a little bit, but I think you know where I'm coming from in this context. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit about on that.
Sure. And first, let me say one thing about when I was teaching in India. Although there are certainly many amazing masters of meditation in India tucked away here and there in caves and huts, around the country. The general populace knows as little about meditation as the general populace here in the United States. People are people, and many Indians have absorbed Western values, and a lot of the tradition has been forgotten and or ignored, I should say. And even among those who still, hold to the tradition, there's a lot of misunderstanding about meditation because it's a very subtle art. And so it does, over time, get kind of the true effective techniques start to get a little bit warped and forgotten, and effort creeps in, and people strain and struggle, and then they start to think, no, you mustn't fall asleep, and all kinds of little problems creep in. So it's wonderful when, so my experience was very much like teaching in the United States, and I teach a lot of people of Indian origin right here in the United States. So, just again, people are people.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's that. Now, as far as the, the guru aspect, this is a very interesting question. I certainly had a guru-disciple relationship with my first teacher and also with Amici, but gradually I kind of have come to a place where, it feels more appropriate to have, the sort of power of decision-making internal. I think you need to humble yourself enough to learn from a teacher, because meditation particularly is a very subtle science and art. If you want to learn to play the piano or the guitar, you're you're going to learn from a teacher if you really want to become accomplished. And you know how valuable that is. If you're a singer, you'll want to have a voice coach, you know. And these are pretty tangible skills. So when it comes to, you know, you might say mastering your own mind, the mind is so subtle, it's so tricky, it can do so many funny things that can delude you, that it's really super important to have a good, solid teacher who has traversed that path for many, many years. So I think that is important. At the same time, the sort of classical guru-disciple relationship is very tricky for anybody, I think, and maybe particularly so for Westerners, because we're just not oriented that way. Our culture isn't directed to help us to surrender our to another human being. And so in any case, I've observed a lot of people trying to have a guru-disciple relationship, and a lot of times it kind of becomes something that isn't entirely healthy, where you hand over your own power to make personal decisions in your life to somebody else, and it starts to feel kind of codependent. So my feeling ultimately is to, certainly to be humble enough to accept instruction from someone as a teacher. But don't give over your own power of discrimination and decision-making to anyone else. Actually, the mark of your own spiritual growth is for you to be able to follow your intuition, your subtle internal intuition, and make wise choices and decisions for yourself. And if that's not happening, if you're always handing that over to someone else, I don't think that's entirely healthy. And perhaps I'm mistaken in this. I know the value of the traditional guru-disciple relationship, where you absorb, through your surrender, you absorb the consciousness of your master. And there may be a very few people who can actually do that relationship effectively, but I have not seen very many of them.
Mm. Well, I find it interesting, as I'm rereading this book, and I'm coming across various examples, one in particular that came to mind as you were sharing in terms of giving away one's individuality, so to speak, and the West has difficulty with that because we've fought so hard to attain our individuality in that respect, where this young man came to a particular master and said, I want to follow you. I want to be your devotee. And basically he says, not unless you can renounce. And he says, no, if you don't take me on, I'm going to jump off of this cliff here. and the guy says, then jump. And he did. Well, they brought the body back to him. He revived him, brought him back to life, and said, you have passed the test, and I will take you on as a disciple because you were willing to give up everything, life itself, in order to follow. And that's an interesting story, but at the same time, when you look at that, you say, okay, how committed are we to our own personal growth and well-being? In a manner of speaking, are we willing to give our lives for living a higher calling, if you will? That's one of the it's interesting. I've had conversations, especially about some of these various issues that are going on around the world, the turmoil and so forth. And I say, well, has anybody sat down and asked them what their beef is? What is the problem that they have with us in the West? I mean, has anybody really sat down and discussed this? What's going on? Why are you guys doing this? And you're willing to sacrifice your lives for this cause? No one's ever done that. And I said, what little I know of the reasons why they're doing this, they have a point. I disagree with their methods, but they have a point. And they're willing to put their lives on the line or take their lives for this particular cause. Well, let's take this to a higher level, a more metaphysical level, if you will, and say, how willing are you to live that higher life that you say you really want? You know, are you willing to turn your life over to somebody else, or are you willing to take on a particular practice? Are you willing to have the discipline to, let's say, meditate, I don't know, 10 minutes a day, you know, and so forth, for 30 days? I've always heard it said, Ajayan, that if you spend time, if you do something repetitively for 30 days, that it's going to stick with you. I've heard other numbers and so forth, but if you do something for a period of time, eventually it becomes sort of habitual in a good sense. And I know that I used to struggle with that because I would say, oh, I really don't have the discipline to spend time meditating or do anything, you know, any other of these things. And then I began to look at that and I realized that I do have the discipline because I have the discipline to get up every morning, 5 days a week, and get myself ready to go to work and do the things, the tasks at work and so forth. In the mornings, go through my regular ritual as far as getting myself ready, brushing the teeth and showering, shaving, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, to say you don't have the discipline, well, if you have enough discipline to get yourself up and do the things that you want to do in your day-to-day life, you really do have the discipline. So you can kind of give yourself that pat on the back saying, ah, I can do this.
Exactly. Yeah, that's really nice. I like the way you, you know, thought about that. That's really cool. Let me ask you this. What is your favorite dessert?
Oh, wow. My favorite dessert, I would have to say, would be, I'm thinking of it. cookie dough ice cream.
Okay, cookie dough ice cream. So what if all of a sudden, you know, somehow you started to become aware that there were all these scientific studies that showed that eating a bowl of cookie dough ice cream every morning would get you, you'd live longer, your creativity would go up, your memory would improve, your heart health would improve, it would relieve stress. All these different things that have been ascribed to meditation, and others, of course, would you have the discipline to eat that bowl of cookie dough ice cream every morning?
I think I could muster that, yes.
So, you know, that's kind of what it's like for me with meditation. And for many people, I think the key is to, again, you know, it's actually is to... learn to do it properly in an effortless way, because then you'll have a rewarding experience. It will be a blissful, enjoyable experience for you to meditate. And when that starts to happen, then it doesn't require discipline per se. Yes, it maybe a little bit because you have to sit down. But once you start to recognize that, hey, this is a wonderful experience. I love doing this. You know, it feels really good. Then the amount of discipline involved in getting yourself to sit down is very minimal. So honestly, I meditate not because I'm well disciplined, but because I'm a hedonist. And honestly, that's a confession. And my wife will absolutely verify that for you. I can, you know, meditate for hour after hour after hour. And that's just because, you know, I've come into that place where it's just so effortless and so deep and clear, and it's wonderfully blissful. And even though it will, you know, that experience grows from when you first begin, even in the very beginning, if you're meditating properly in a way that is effortless, you're allowing yourself to be meditated, then it's very satisfying. It's a very charming, kind of pleasant experience. So the amount of discipline required is very little. You just have to, you know, go out, take the class or read the book or, you know, and then start and, you know, do it a few days in a row, and then you'll start to really like it.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a short break here. We're going to come back and talk more with Ajayan Boris and his work, the book that we're talking about and the subject matter, Effortless Mind, and it is Meditation with Ease, Effortless Mind. Calm your mind, connect with your heart, and revitalize your life. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we'll be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We're talking with Ajayan Boris and his book, Effortless Mind, and we're talking about meditation. And actually, we as you have already surmised, I'm sure, Ajayan, that we talk about a lot of different things within the context of the subject matter that might be at hand. And we kind of just, as I say to many of my guests, the universe asks the questions. I'm just along for the ride, and I never know what's going to come up at any given time. So it's kind of fun because you just don't know what's going to come next. I am intrigued by this whole process because I know that I've talked with a number of people. I'm associated with some folks here in the Santa Barbara area who hold classes. One gal actually holds them for free in a park. She invites people on a particular day at a particular time to come out, and I think she allocates no more than maybe a half hour to an hour. You can come whenever you'd like during that period and sit and meditate, and she will help you to begin that process. And I'm not sure exactly what the technique is that she uses, the style, if you will. But what she has found, and we've had, I've spoken with some of the people who have experienced her classes. You know, they say that when they go back to work or go back to school or go back to their daily tasks, that they do feel a refreshedness, if you will. And she is quite emphatic about making it effortless. I remember I was with my wife. We were she was involved with a group that practiced Tai Chi on a regular basis, and I met her, and then I started to go to some of these classes with her. And I remember the first one that I went to, and of course I said, "Okay, let's all go out in the backyard and we're going to play the music, and I want you to just, okay, we're going to do the movements, you know, we're going to go through the whole thing." And I had no clue. I didn't know what the movements were, what the positions were, and so on and so forth. And so I'm trying to follow everyone else. And the one who was directing and teaching this practice came up to me, and he said, "Relax." He said, "Just let the energy take you. Just flow in whatever way, move in whatever way works for you. Don't try to emulate what everybody else is doing." And I have to say that really took the pressure off. I didn't have to worry about being embarrassed for not following along. And I didn't have to feel frustrated because I couldn't follow along with everyone else because I didn't know. And to be told, just let the energy flow, was a huge lift. And I'm thinking that people that you come in contact with, that you teach meditation to, some come to you, they want to do it, but they're sort of stuck in that same sense of, "Yeah, but I don't want to do it wrong. I want to do it like everybody else is doing it. I want to get from point A to point B in the proper time frame." In other words, they're really stuck on the structure. Go ahead.
You're totally right about that, Richard. And it's beautiful. I love the experience that you had with the Tai Chi, and the fact that your teacher told you that is just perfect. And because people come to my meditation classes, like you say, with these ideas of what it should look like, and also these ideas, in fact, always mistaken, it seems, about how everyone else is doing it so much better, and other people don't have, you know, such a crazy mind as I have, and that kind of thing. And I've been told countless times how it is so much of relief and so relaxing to realize, okay, I don't have to struggle against thoughts, you know, that thoughts are a part of the meditation and I just can, you know, be unconcerned with them. And that's such a huge relief for people. And to just accept the experience and, okay, you know, if I happen to be tired and I fall asleep, you know, that's okay. So that kind of thing, it's the same kind of experience you had with the Tai Chi, and it's a great relief for people, and it actually is so important to getting them on the right path of meditation, you know, to drop all those ideas and be willing to just have that natural experience, because it's really all about letting nature do it. You know, when you're going into a deep state in meditation, it's because of that nature of the mind to follow its bliss. And so it just takes you in, like the force of gravity. It's just taking you in. You don't have to do it. And then when you're having lots of thoughts in meditation, it's the nature of the body to purify. And with all that purification, it stirs the mind. And so you may have lots of thoughts. But either way, you know, it's completely natural. And you don't want to be fighting or pitting yourself against nature. Because as a friend of mine, Byron Katie, says, you know, if you pit yourself against nature, you'll lose. So we want to move with nature. And anyway, so that sounds like just the principle that Tai Chi teacher was going by when he told you that.
Well, now that's interesting. You just used a phrase that I've only just recently heard in terms of, what was it, fighting nature? Was that how you phrased it?
Yeah, fight nature or pitting yourself against nature
and you're going to lose every time. And it's interesting. I've heard that in a different context, but the reality is still the same, because the conversations or dialogue, I can't remember if this was in the context of a documentary that I was watching, but nonetheless, it was real interesting, because I heard that and I'm thinking, boy, that makes a lot of sense. And it's not just in the big things like hurricanes or natural disasters or things of this nature. It's even in the smallest of things. I mean, I'll give you a case in point. You know, where we live up above Santa Barbara in the mountains and in a rural area. And during certain times of the year, we have a problem with ants. And we could call the local exterminator and say, hey, we need you to come up here and, you know, take care of this problem. But one of the things that we realized was they're there for a reason, and we have to figure out what it is. Well, usually they're looking for food or water. Well, did we leave food or water out? Even small amounts, trace amounts on the surfaces, it's going to draw them in. And so we make it a point during those periods of time when the weather is as it is, making sure that the countertops and so forth surfaces are clean and clear of any liquid or any kind of food scraps and so forth. And 9 times out of 10, they don't show up. Or they'll show up somewhere else and look elsewhere. You know, they'll shift and move. But I think that because when you say pit yourself against nature, well, what if we went ahead and did the extermination and put all those chemicals down around the house? Well, what else is going to be affected? What's the logical chain of events that's going to take place? Even here, when they talk about trying to get rid of certain larger pests, well, what happens when those larger pests are killed by those chemicals? Then you have even larger predators of those pests, as we like to call them, who are going to eat them, and then they're going to die, and so on and down the food chain. Right. And then what have you done?
Yeah, and of course, you know, there's so many different things that can happen. Those chemicals get into the water table. Who knows? They could be behind the problem with bees, you know, which of course are essential to our food. And anyway, so, you know, there can be repercussions that we're hardly could imagine, but they can still happen.
I want to let our listeners know, yeah. Ajayan, Boris, and ajayan.com is your website, A-J-A-Y-A-N, Ajayan. And you can find out about his book, Effortless Mind, Meditate with Ease. And we certainly hope that you will do that. And I know you have other things that are going on the website as well. I'm curious, because I did notice that there was at least one video. I hadn't had a chance to watch it, but I'm curious as to whether you have sort of a meditation class via video in that respect.
Well, thank you for asking. I have a video course called Toning the Energetic Body, which is, like I said, a really powerful preface to the meditation. So if you get the book, Effortless Mind, there I teach the meditation. But I didn't try to teach all the breathing exercises and everything that you can do that really deepen the meditation which I practice, you know, and when I teach it in a class, I teach those to be practiced before the meditation. So that's all on the website in a video class. Also, if people get the book, I do have a guided meditation audio that you can download from the website that will, you know, with my voice guiding you through the meditation that you learn in the book. So, so anyway, that's to support that practice. So there's, yeah, there's several things on the site and many interviews with me, and I have a radio show, so I interview other people, lots of articles on meditation, a blog and whatnot. So all kinds of goodies on that website.
Great. You also dive into the realm of the chakras.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I read a book not too long ago, well, quite a long, quite a while ago. My mother turned me onto this particular book, and it's called Joy's Way. And it focused on the chakras. That was the focal point of the book itself. Mm-hmm. But it started to get extremely detailed. It just didn't focus on the seven central spinal chakras. It began to talk about how there are other chakra centers throughout the body, specifically at the joints, like the elbows and the knees, I think the second level, if you will, and so on. I mean, the joints and the fingers and the toes, and again, even different spots up and down the arms and the legs and the torso. And I thought, wow, I had never heard of this before. All I knew was there were seven, you know, from the base of the spine to the top of the head, to the crown. And they had different colors, color representations, and even different vibrations and sound and so forth. I associate with the chakras are more of the music of Stephen Halpern, going back quite a number of years. I'm curious as to your experiences and understanding of the what I'll refer to as the chakra system.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so in the book, you know, I do teach, I kind of keep it to the chakras that are along the spine and mm-hmm. in the head. And these are by far the primary chakras. There are many chakras throughout the body, and there's a whole network of subtle channels through which that energy flows. The chakras are a feature of the energetic body that I mentioned earlier. You know, in Indian philosophy, they talk about different layers to our being, the panchakosha. So there's the physical body, the energetic body, the mental, emotional body, and so on. So anyway, but it's interesting. I first experienced the chakras years ago, you know, many years ago, when before I even knew anything about them, I was on a meditation retreat, and at that time I was doing a form of meditation that didn't involve the chakras at all. I mean, you didn't focus on the chakras. I had no knowledge of them. But one day I had a particularly, you know, lots of great experiences in meditation. And that night I went to sleep. And after I fell asleep, I had this amazing thing. It started in a kind of dream state where I felt this distinct and powerful energy kind of come up from my inner thigh into the perineal area, the perineum. And it was like, it just went in, and as soon as it got to the perineum, it was this explosion of energy. And then it, in quick succession, went up the spine, and there were these explosions of kind of like balls of light at each of the areas of where I now know the chakras are. And so, and when it got into the head, I woke up. And I could hardly believe it. You know, clearly, I just experienced the chakras and without even knowing about them. And so this kind of validated the existence for me. Another interesting aspect of this was that it was very distinct how it started in the inner thighs. And for years and years, I couldn't make sense of that because, you know, what did that have to do with the chakras? But I later learned, finally, that there is this subtle channel called the hidden nadi that runs from the knees through the inner thighs into the perineum, which is the site of the root chakra. And when that nadi becomes activated, it brings energy into the perineum and awakens that chakra there, awakens the energy at the root chakra. And so, and this is a well-known thing that's discussed in various tantric texts. And I, of course, had no knowledge of that, and yet I had that distinct experience while I was asleep. So this is, it does exist. The chakras exist. This energetic body exists. And we can learn to, work on that level. And as we clear the nadis and activate those subtle energies, we just gain so much vitality, so much mental clarity. You know, it awakens those centers of higher consciousness and energy in the body, and you feel it in your mind and your whole being. And so it's really a wonderful knowledge. And that's what I'm dealing with on that video course on my website that I mentioned, the toning the energetic body, using techniques to awaken those energies and begin to direct that flow of energy up through the primary nadis in and around the spine to clear and awaken those major chakras.
Mm. Well, I would associate them also with a lot of the other energy patterns that have been found. I know that there are the meridians of Chinese medicine and so mm-hmm. forth. And I mean, and the list goes on. I mean, around the world, you have different people who have determined these different energy cycles, circles, circuits, centers, however you want to phrase them, and they're there. It has been determined by science that we are electromagnetic beings, and that we put off an electrical charge. It's interesting. There have been phases in time where my wife has had problems when she goes to touch anything metal and she gets an electrical shock. I say, well, what's going on? What is it that you're charged up about? I mean, because that's the only thing I can think of, because I'm not getting shocked. So it can't be static electricity that's being generated, on top of the fact that we have wood floors in our home. So yeah. There are no carpets to rub your feet on to generate a static charge in order to then discharge it on the stove or at the sink or at the refrigerator, so we have that electrical impulse that's coursing through our body, and it's represented by all of these different systems. When people want to get in touch with you, they certainly can go to ajaya.com. Mm-hmm. But in terms of getting in touch with you directly, is there an email address that you prefer? Is that available there at the site where they can just touch base with you and say, hey, sure, I'd like to take a course or learn more?
Of course, yeah. So my email address is ajayan@ajayan.com. And Ajayan is spelled A-J-A-Y-A-N. So, and of course, if you just go to the website, ajayan.com, there's a contact page, and that email address is there. So, yeah, I'd love to hear from you. And, that's actually my mission, is just to make meditation available to as many people as I can. So please, if somebody's interested in learning, you can contact me. Like I say, I also actually teach the meditation in the book. So if you want to start with the book, you can do that. But then I think you might find it helpful to go to the website and get that download too, where you can, where I'm guiding the meditation. I really think that's helpful for people who read the book first to get started on their meditation.
What does the name Ajayan mean?
Okay. Well, first, it means the unconquerable one. And I didn't pick that, and I don't know why I got that name, but I am Ajayan, the unconquerable one.
I like that. I like that. I think it's a great name, especially the definition. I find it interesting too, the names that people either have been given or somewhere mm-hmm. along the way in their lives, they choose a new name. My wife did that. Ajayan Boris, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program and sharing with us your story and effortless mind meditate with ease. It's been great to have you on the program.
Thank you, Richard. I really enjoyed it, and thank you for all your great questions.
And then a reminder to our listeners that they can go to ajayan.com, and they can also contact ajayan at ajayan.com. That's the email address for further information, classes, or just want to follow up with what we've talked about here on the program. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal. And it was actually given to her by her mentor, the gentleman that she was following at the time. So I think it's very important to choose and make sure that you have the name that fits you as you begin to unravel who you really are. Ajayan Boris is my guest, and before we wrap up, I have three final questions for you. Who is Ajayan Boris?
Who is Ajayan Boris? Okay, wow. Well, that is an amazing question. So, you know, on an ultimate level, you know, I tell you, I look in the mirror and I'm sometimes surprised, and I know that that is not who I am. That I am, you know, much more than what I see in the mirror. And ultimately, I'd say, you know, I'm consciousness. I am that omnipresent pure spirit that just is everywhere and at the heart of everything. So that is Ajayan Boris.
And though I know you've addressed this already, even throughout the program, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
My actual mission is to, as much as, you know, one person can hope to do, alleviate suffering for people, and help people find their own inner higher light, so that they can just enjoy life more and shine that light into the world and give it to others.
And are you optimistic or pessimistic about man's future here on this planet?
You know, I've got to be, I'm optimistic. I think we're headed, you know, I feel like we're almost at the verge of the fall of the Roman Empire in a lot of ways. But that's a much more involved answer. But I think ultimately that we will not only persist, but thrive, that we will come through that, and there will be some portion of humanity that will be kind of reborn and awakened, and there will be, you know, and bring much more light and care and love into the world than we're doing right now.
Ajayan Boris, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program and sharing with us your story and effortless mind meditate with ease. It's been great to have you on the program.
Thank you, Richard. I really enjoyed it, and thank you for all your great questions.
And then a reminder to our listeners that they can go to ajayan.com, and they can also contact ajayan at ajayan.com. That's the email address for further information, classes, or just want to follow up with what we've talked about here on the program. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.